Good morning. So this is my last week, so there are three lectures left. And my purpose is to focus on some aspects of renormalization theory, well, in general, renormalization group, and a bit of come to the renormalization of gauge theories, which is, of course, a very important topic and feature of gauge theory. But today, I want to discuss some general philosophy and feature of renormalization and renormalization group. So I'm going to assume that you got a first, exposition and view and about renormalization in quantum field theory, in particular in QED, in perturbation theory, from Dan and Wong, and from David Kubitschnak, I presume, and maybe also in the condensed matter, but in the statistical physics group, from the point of the application of renormalization group theory in critical phenomena and its statistical physics. So I'm assume that you have some idea or precise idea already for some, at least the first aspect and simple calculation. And I would like to discuss the connection between the two. So, well, if you all of you know that, feel that you know that very well, I'm just doing things that you have been already exposed, and just tell me, and we'll switch to some other things. We'll go to some more advanced topics. But, so please don't just be shy. Okay, so as you know, renormalization is a concept, a general way to view at things and study physical phenomena, both in statistical mechanics and in high energy physics. And the point of view, both from history and from the kind of phenomenon one is interested, is a bit different. But in fact, both were unified in some sense by Ken Wilson, who is a famous Nobel Prize, who started as a high energy physicist and then switched to statistical mechanics, and so it stays in high energy physics. He did very important work in both. And because he had this dual point of view, he was able to make this breakthrough. He was not the only one to contribute. Okay, so the idea of renormalization, as you know, is so I will keep that so that you have, you see, let me call this momentum, line of momentum scales. So energies or momentum. And that's a point of view which is mostly used in, well, from the point of view of high energy physics, when interested in what's happening at high energy, what's the structure of matter as higher and higher energy, therefore as smaller and smaller scales. Okay, so, but of course you can also view in the opposite way in terms of momenta, of a position, I think, of distances or positions. What's happening at larger and larger distance scales or position scales. And that's the point of view of statistical mechanics and condensed matter. Okay. And in high energy physics, in fact, one is interested in what's happening at some typical energy. The energy of the experiment. So if you are doing quantum physics, atomic physics, you are interested in what's happening at the scale of atoms. So for instance, the typical energy as electron volts. If you are working in high energies, you are interested in what's happening at MeV or GeV or now TeV. And so this energy scale is a physical energy scale, but it's also in technical terms called the renormalization scale. That's the scale of energy that you at which you probe. So you have some scale that I'm going to denote mu, but it's an energy or mass, but energy equal mass. So that's a renormalization scale of mass or energy. So here, mass equal energies, because we scale C to one. Okay, and that's the energy scale at which one scales the physics. Energy scale for the physics. Okay. And both in perturbative calculation, but in actual theories, in fact, one thing that the physics at Hall scales is an effective physics that that derives from higher energy and hopefully, possibly simpler physics at much, much higher energy scale. So there is some high energy scale that I'm going to denote by lambda, because it corresponds in the usual, in actual perturbative calculation as a high momentum cutoff. That you introduce to deal with the problem that appears in perturbative calculation of ultraviolet divergence. But of course, this higher momentum cutoff can be either viewed as intermediate in the calculation, or it comes from the fact that there is a physical scale where you expect that the theory you start to formulate as a local quantum field theory breaks down. So it can be the Planck mass or the Grand unification mass, where you expect you have many, many, possibly other massive particles at play, and the effective physics we receive is just an effective low energy physics. Okay. In statistical mechanics or in condensed matter, well, that's the opposite. We have a microscopic scale. Which is a microscopic at which the model makes sense. So for instance, it can be, so let's call it A. And it can be the, it can be atomic scale, so it can be an atomic. Okay, so in models of magnets, and many models of condensed matter, it's a typical distance between atoms in the materials. In soft energy, in what is called soft matter, it's rather the size of the typical big molecules that are the basic constituent of films or polymers. So it can be a molecular scale. Okay, so it can be of the order of the angstrom, but it can be of the order of tens or hundreds of angstrom. It can go up to the micron in colloidal systems. Okay. Okay. It can be also, of course, a lattice mesh of the model of statistical mechanics you are using. For instance, in the Isaac model, the Isaac model is defined on lattice, and that's just the lattice mesh. So it's a mathematical parameter, in the same sense that this cutoff is a mathematical. Okay, and then you have at smaller distance, at larger distance or smaller energy scale, a macroscopic scale. Scale of distance, which is the size of the size at which you study a phenomenon. So it can be the size of the sample. It can be also just the wavelength at which you probe. When you study a material, for instance, in condensed matter, you often do it by sending light or X-rays or neutrons and seeing how they behave and how they interact. That's a way to probe the spin, the distance, and so it can be the wavelength of light or the De Broglie or the wavelength of if it's a quantum particle like neutrons, etc. Okay, and this macroscopic scale, let's call it L. So it can be of the order of the micron, it can be of the order of the millimeter, centimeters, whatever. Okay, and so the idea of, in high energy physics, the way you have been exposed to renormalization theory in high energy physics is that, in fact, you define the renormalized parameter. In a physical theory, it can be the mass of the electron, it can be the find such a constant, the coupling, the charge of the electron, you want to define a theory of, for example, quantum electrodynamics with a definite mass for the electron and a definite charge to compare with experiments, because those are things you measure. And it turns out that in order to define the quantum theory with those renormalized parameters at this renormalization scale, the bare parameter of the theory, or the bare parameters, are different. So the electron must mass the bare mass. If you want to make sense of the calculation, you must introduce in the theory you start from for defining, for instance, a functional integral, you must introduce the bare mass for the particle, a bare charge, which are different. And you do the calculation, you see that you have to, you know, adjust to do some fine-tuning of those bare parameters. So there are parameters of the theory, so you have to adjust them in order to get a finite number that you can compare with your experiments or your calculation. And you are interested in what's going on when lambda goes to infinity. So you want to get rid of the high energy cutoff to have a physics that doesn't depend on the detail of the very high energy physics, which is valid there. And you have to see whether this scenario, this way of calculating is consistent. And if it's consistent, the quantum physics theory you want to describe there is said to be renormalizable. That's the example of QED, that's the example of phi 4 theory, etc., or KF series. If in order to have something which is makes sense here, you have to introduce more and more parameters and the things blows up, then the theory is said to be non-renormalizable, and that's a different matter. There are some cures, but not often. Okay. So that's the philosophy of renormalization in high energy physics. The philosophy in a statistical mix in the Wilsonian renormalization group is completely different. This is fixed. For instance, you define a model, and the parameter can be the strength in the Ising model. This can be the coupling between the spins and the temperature. And the temperature is something that, it's the spins of the Ising model that are in equilibrium with some big thermostat. So this is the microscopic temperature of the spin. These are, for instance, coupling sigma SISG, the Ising model. This can be the temperature. Okay, T. And you are interested in what is the effective theory at the scale L, when L is much larger than A. And the philosophy of Wilson is that you consider that you go from A to L by stating that L is much larger than A. So you associate some scaling parameter, S, much larger than one, and see what's happening and whether from some microscopic coupling, you get an effective physics, renormalized physics at large scales, which is in some sense independent of what's going on. So the question is in classical mechanics, using the Wilsonian normalization group, is that you are going from there to there, and you are interested in how this changes with the scale at which you change that. So you change this varies. In high energy physics, you are more interested in what's going there. Then you fix them, okay? So you are writing that this renormalization scale mu is S minus one lambda, which is much smaller than the microscopic scale. But again, S is much larger than one. And renormalization group predicts that in the same way, and you can change that. This tells you how this change, how the effective renormalized parameter changes with mu, with the scale, whether the physics is the same, the effective charge of, for instance, of the electron is the same at the EV energy scale, which is the scale where the physics of atomic physics is fixed, is working, and at MEV or GEV. And it turns out that's not the same for the same physical system. Okay, so that's the picture. And the way either the microscopic, the macroscopic parameter which describes, so here you have macroscopic parameter, parameters, which depends on this scaling factor. In the same way here, you have defined a theory which have fixed mu. Makes sense when lambda goes to infinity. And then you are interested for the same theory, how does those renormalized parameters vary if you change the scale for the same theory? So which renormalized parameter for a different mu prime comes from the same physics? So in fact, you see, that's the idea, is that that's the same. So in some sense, fixing mu and seeing how change things with lambda in this energy framework way of picture is the same than fixing A and seeing how this change. Because you are just interested in what's going with either we do this or you do this. Okay, so that's the general picture. Of course, there are no calculation and nothing warrants that this is going to work. That's for you have to do the hard work, do the calculation. So what I would like to so I spent quarter an hour, so that's fine. So now I wanted to give an example where you can give calculation, which is a bit more than the renormalization. That's a perturbative calculation that you have done in the QFT1 and QFT2 course, which is in fact another version of this Wilsonian block spin renormalization that I presume you have seen in statistical mechanics. And well, it's based on more developed formalism for renormalization group. So it's a mixture of two things that I'm not going to explain there, but you can find good lecture on that. It's the formalism of what's called renormalized actions, which is comes from the idea of Ken Wilson in statistical mechanics, but Ken Wilson had a formation in, you know, his background, his original background was energy. And this idea of Wilson to see has been developed by famous high energy physicists and string theorists with Joe Polchinski later on. So the way to treat this feature of this idea of renormalizing actions according to Wilson, but making something which makes sense in QFT and in particular in perturbation theory, so connecting the non-perturbative picture of Wilson and the perturbative calculations that people were doing since the 50s, is called the formalism of renormalized action. Now, there is another potential which is related, which is called, instead of considering the action, you consider the effective potential of a theory. Remember, we define what is the effective action, that's potential, or but it corresponds to action. It's related to this effective action functionals that we have defined in the first weeks, which technically it generates the one particle irreducible of the diagrams of the theory. Okay, and in the same way you can define the renormalization action, you can see how the renormalization group picture, this picture that I drew, acts on effective actions or effective potential. So this is due to a German physicist called Christoph Petrisch. And well, Bolshinsky was a high energy physicist and string theorist. Petrisch, I think, is a more of a condensed matter physicist, but in fact, it turns out the sixth way to proceed to calculate. In fact, it is now used also in energy physics and in particular for some model of quantum gravity. So again, high energy physics and condensed matter have made some sense. And of course, going from some action to effective potential means that there is a connection which is by some kind of Legendre transform between the two formalisms. So not really two different ways to formalize the normalization group, but two different ways to compute the same object. Okay, so I'm not going to discuss what this is because that's a bit involved. That's too involved. But this allows, for instance, to prove mathematical physicists are able to prove mathematical results on normalization on a QFT using this formalism. Okay, so what I'm going to do is to illustrate this on a simple approximation scheme for the scalar field in an approximation which is called the local potential approximation, or LPA. And this is an approximation, so I'm not going to make some precise non-perturbative result, but I'm going to make, in some sense, non-perturbative calculation because I'm going to deal with a general potential, not a specific model. But still, in fact, many of the approximations are valid to one loop. In fact, there will be some one-loop approximation contained in what I'm going to do, but this can be extended, this local potential approximation can be extended to higher loop, but I'm not going to do that, but that's possible. Okay, so there are notes in the lecture notes, there are details on this calculation, but so I'm just going to explain what is it. So I'm considering a theory, a quantum theory defined by functional integral in the Euclidean framework, because that's easier. And the action, so I'm going to write A the action, because since there is a scaling parameter. So the action for this scalar field, I take it of the general form, so I'm working in d-dimensional space-time, the Euclidean, and I just have the standard d mu phi squared kinetic term in the action, so time and space derivative, and then I had a general potential, V. General potential. And you see, if the potential is something like that, for instance, this describes the standard Heising-like critical point, or symmetry breaking in high energy physics. If you have a field with several components and you have several vacua. But if you consider a potential like that, with three minima, for instance, you can study what is called a multi-critical point. Okay? And since the formalism in general, you may be interested in a potential in phi, which behaves like that. Here I put phi, here I put v, and you may consider a potential which is like that. You have a wall here for negative phi. There is a well, and then the potential is flat at infinity. Okay, so it's usually not potential which are very useful in high energy physics. Although some of them are used in inflation models, but it's a model which is very interesting if you describe an interface between, for instance, water and a gas, a liquid and a gas, near to a surface. And here phi is just the distance between the interface and the interface and the surface. the solid surface. And well, there is a very interesting physics going with this kind of problems, which is called the physics of wetting transition and wetting phenomena. Does the liquid, you know, likes the solid so that it makes a thin layer, or does it prefer to go away? So in other sense, is the solid surface wet or not? Okay, so this is related to wetting problems. Anyway, so I'm going to have a general. And okay, and so this V of phi, you can take it, for instance, in general, you can expand it at least in those as a sum from, let's call it, I don't know. Equal 2 to, well, 1 to infinity, take a general potential of gk divided by factorial 2k, phi 2k, for instance. I consider only even potential, but you may consider odd potential. So, for instance, if you consider only k equal 1 and 2, that's the standard phi 4 potential, but if you have k equal 3, you are adding a phi 6 potential, which is relevant for that, etc. So it's a general potential, possibly even or not. Potential. Okay. And well, you know that in general, when you make this model quantum, or if you want to make this a model of statistical mechanics, problems, you have to define a functional integral. So you want to define something like, which is V of phi exponential minus, and here I don't put A of phi, and integrate over all phi. So now, instead of doing that, according to this Wilson framework, what you can do is that you separate the fluctuation of phi. You consider that you take its Fourier transform in momentum space. And you want to integrate. You take a sharp cutoff, for instance, that you can do it for other cutoff, but you can take a sharp cutoff. I consider that k is less than or equal to lambda. So it's within this ball with radius lambda. And you want to integrate over a shell. You want to integrate for the k between lambda and lambda 1 minus epsilon. I take epsilon to be small for simplicity. Because if you can integrate for a thin shell, then you can iterate the processes. And that's the idea of Wilsonian renormalization. Okay. So I take a thin shell. And in fact, you see that this corresponds to taking a scaling parameter. S equal 1 plus epsilon. So on this picture, I start there and I move there by a factor of 1 plus epsilon. Okay. And then iterate means going there. Okay. So, renormalization means that you have two things. First, you iterate over the phi, the fluctuation phi of k, or k in this domain, in the cell. And of course, then you end up, you start from an action A. You apply, so according to the Wilson-Polchinski scheme, you integrate over that, and so you write as usual phi tilde plus phi slow and background field, you integrate over the phi tilde, which are such as that. and fast, and you get an effective action for this phi slope that I'm going to compute at one loop in a minute. Okay, and then that's the first step. So you get an effective, action, and then, well, you have to compare what is comparable. You want to compare a theory with cutoff lambda to a renormalized theory, again with cutoff lambda. So this is a theory with cutoff lambda prime equal lambda 1 minus epsilon. So in order to compare the original action here with the action that is obtained by integrating all that, you have to perform a rescaling. You have to rescale. Well, it's easy. You have just to rescale the momenta by dividing them by 1 minus epsilon. So you have to rescale the distance into x, the original x times 1 minus epsilon, or the momenta, 1 plus epsilon. Okay. And in order to have a new cutoff, or lambda, those are the renormalized distance, renormalized momenta, renormalized cutoff. Okay. And when doing so, you realize that you have also to renormalize the field. If you want to keep this form of action, I'm going to show you how this works. So this is a general, very, you know, unwavering feature. But actually, in the case of this local potential approximation, one is able to do actual calculation. So what is this local potential approximation? I'm going to help you. Okay, first, I'm using this the calculation we did the first for the one loop calculation. So you can see that, in fact, you expect that, well, in general, the one loop effect are just given by the trace. See, you have to add to the action, compute the effective action of your theory, you have to add to one half of the trace, the logarithm of the derivative of the action, the functional derivative, which is in this case minus the operator Laplacian, the Laplace operator, plus the second derivative of the field. And then you have higher order, but that's one loop. That's correct. That's a full, that's a general solution for any phi. But now I'm going to assume that phi is some phi slow, which is constant, independent of x, plus the phi fast. We depend on x, and we integrate over just the shell of momenta. Now, you can realize that, you see, if phi is constant, if the field phi is constant, that's a very peculiar case of computing an effective potential. Well, trace, you can revise this, the trace of the log of this operator can be written, well, the trace is an integral over x of the diagonal matrix element of the log of an operator. Okay, of x Okay, but now you see this operator, it's a minus the Laplacian plus some constant terms. It's like a mass, but depending on the value of phi, just for phi constant. So you can rewrite this in momentum space. It's translational invariance. If phi is constant, translational invariance. So you can go in Fourier space. And well, you do the calculation, what you do, you can write this. This is d integral over dx, integral over dk over 2 pi to the power d. And then you have the representation in momentum space of the log of the Laplacian, which is mine, which is k squared. Oops. Plus a number which is just the second derivative of the potential at for given phi that you have fixed. Remember, phi is fixed. I treat is phi of x, phi the constant. Okay, so that's a general formula when you iterate over all fluctuations. Now, well, you can show, I'm a bit unwaving that, but you can show yet. You making the calculation, you when you integrate only on the k here, means that you simply integrate here over the momentum k, which are in this momentum shell. You integrate only in the momentum shell. And so if you take the trace, but only in the momentum scale, you restrict if this integration in shell. Well, instead of having this big integral, you get something which is simply well, you can make a radial quantization. That's going to be simpler because k squared is a constant. So basically, what you have is that, well, that's easy. You get a factor epsilon, that's the size of the epsilon, times I'm sorry, ddx. You get epsilon. You get the volume, you get a factor lambda d, because you integrate over a shell of radius epsilon d, of width epsilon d, and you integrate all the other radial components, so you get a factor lambda d minus one times the factor, which is sd, divided by 2p to the power d, or rather sd minus one, where this is just the volume of the sphere. SD minus one equal RD. So it's the volume of the D minus one unit sphere. Well, you know that. What is it for D equal one? This is two. So the unit sphere in one dimension is just 2 points. For D equal two, this is just, of course, 2 pi. That's Euclidean geometry. For D equal three, the area of the unit two-dimensional sphere in three dimensions at 4 pi, etc. Okay, so this is SD minus one. And then what you get is finally, well, of course, lambda squared plus the second derivative of phi times the log. Of course, so log of lambda squared plus second derivative. Okay, so you may be a bit worried because this has a dimension of momentum and the log, you cannot define what is the logarithm of a momentum. You can define only what is the log of a number, of log of one, log of two, log of three. But in fact, this means that if you are a bit careful with the functional integration, it means that in fact you have to take into account the measure here. And in fact, it's lambda squared divided by lambda squared. So that this is dimensionless. At the only scale you have a microscope. Okay, so you end up with the fact that the effective action for this Phi's law. In the approximation where Phi's law is just a constant, well, this is dd of x, 1/2 of d mu phi law squared. I'll just keep as d of phi law. And then I'm adding this coefficient plus epsilon times this factor. So I get this factor, let's call it d. So I get a lambda d cd log of okay. So by doing that, so we did two approximations. We did an approximation where I keep only the one loop term, and we did a calculation where you consider that E here phi can be considered as a almost constant. Okay, so doing that, we have made the first step. And what's interesting, you see, is that in fact this is just a local term. So you have not changed the potential term, the derivative term. You have just changed the potential. So you see, that's just, instead of having an effective action, you just add that the initial potential has been changed into an effective local potential. That's much simpler. But that's still valid for any potential, this formula. For any of those problems, we get the same formula. Okay, so now we have to realize the second step. And to realize the second step, so let me erase this. To realize the second step, but you just have to do this. And you just erase. So I have to change right at x equal, let's call it x prime 1 minus epsilon, k equal k prime 1 plus epsilon, because that's true. And if you do that, of course, d dx change by a factor minus epsilon d, mu d mu change by a factor plus epsilon. So in order to keep this term fixed, you have to change phi into phi prime, which is going to be given by phi with a factor 1 plus something of order epsilon. And what you get, if I don't look at my notes, I'm going to make a mistake. So it's just given, you have to absorb the fact that you have a minus epsilon d here. So this has to be 1 plus I'm going to write this to 2 minus d over 2 epsilon times phi. Okay. No. Plus d minus 2 epsilon over. So I rescale the distance, I rescale the momentum, but I have to rescale the phi, the definition of phi. Phi, you integrate over it. So I make a rescaling of the field. But this factor, d minus 2 over 2, that I'm writing here, is just, this is, let's call it this delta. This is just what is called the scaling dimension of the field, you see. the action has to be something which is dimensionless. So x has a dimension, in the dimension of distance is d, mu has dimension minus one, so 2d has dimension minus two, so you have to come, so phi must have a dimension in momentum, 2 minus d over 2. So that's a scaling dimension in momentum energy. Okay. So that gives 2 minus d over 2 in terms of position. This is required for S to be dimensionless. Okay. And with this dimension, you know, so you see with this, I should remember that V is a coefficient of the phi. If phi has a dimension, and if you write the phi, V of phi as the sum over some k of gk by k, that's not exactly the same k. This has dimension, so V must have dimension, momentum dimension d. It has dimension d. Phi k has dimension k times d minus 2 over 2. So gk has dimension delta gk, delta k, let's say, which is, it must have dimension d minus k, d minus 2 over 2. This is the dimension of the coupling. Constant gk. Okay. And if I made no mistakes, you see that in dimension 2, the dimension of for g2 is always 2. It is always for k equal 2, the d disappears, so it always has dimension 2. So this corresponds to a mass, that's a mass squared phi squared. For k equal 4, this is d minus 2 times d minus 2. So that's 4 minus d. So this is 2 for k equal 2. This is 4 minus d for k equal 4, etc. So you see the critical dimension, the fact that the dimension 4 plays a very special role in this calculation or normalization, because it's only in 4 dimensions that the coupling associated to the phi 4 is dimensionless. Okay. So, well, you do the calculation by making this change, and then you get the renormalized action. Well, that's A. I'm sorry, this is not. So you do this rescaling, and you do a renormalized action. That's a renormalized action at S equal 1 plus epsilon of my new field phi prime, and this is just going to be of the same form as usual, dd of x prime, 1 half of d over dx prime mu of phi prime squared plus a renormalized potential v of 1 plus epsilon phi prime. That's the renormalized action. And you just make the calculation. You find that the renormalized potential of phi prime, this renormalized potential, is just the ordinary potential, the first potential v of phi. Well, this should be phi prime, eh? But that's just a dummy variable. And then you get a factor which is epsilon. And then you get minus d minus 2 over 2 phi times the first derivative of the potential. It just comes from the rescaling of phi into this term. Okay, so that's the dimension of the field, and that's my prime. And then this, you get this factor, well, I call it C in my notes, it's A, but it's not very important, plus C log of 1 plus second derivative of phi prime. Oh, there is a lambda square divided by lambda square. And there is a factor lambda square here. Okay. So you see that this is the variation of the potential. Okay. And in this approximation, in this LPA approximation, you get that the potential, the local potential is transformed into another potential, which is a non-linear function of V and its first and second derivative. And it's non-linear because there is a log that's going to be important. Okay. And A is just this, C is just this, this parameter, the number. Okay. So now, of course, well, here phi has a dimension, the potential has a dimension. So it's better to express everything in terms of dimensional quantity. So imagine that you change phi into phi, and I divide phi by its dimension in momentum. So I divide phi by phi, lambda d minus 2 over 2. So I call this phi tilde. Well, not tilde, but that's a new phi. And everything. So then, so if I make this, I re-express everything in terms of the scale. So then it's equivalent, this is equivalent to set lambda equal 1 in my calculation. In the same way, I express the momenta into k divided by lambda and x into x lambda. So I express everything in terms of units of the cutoff. And I'm allowed to do that because I do a randomization. So I start from a lambda, I integrate a bit, I come back to this lambda. So I can always working at the same lambda. And of course, if you do this calculations, and the lambda here disappears, the lambda here disappears, V is dimensionless. You renormalize V by lambda by the same video. So you change V into lambda minus D V, so that this absorbs the D DX. And by that, so everything is dimensionless. Everything is dimensionless. Okay. And then you see that you can write this as the fact that now if you iterate to go from west equal 1 plus epsilon to the power n, with n very large, you can see that you get from the initial V to some V, which is a function of S of phi. And this is just the equation which tells you how this V of S changes when you make a small deformation. So you can rewrite this equation as the derivative of V of S when you take a variation of S, and since you are iterating 1 plus epsilon, you are taking a logarithmic derivative. This is, so this is the initial term, this is the variation, and you get that this is simply you made this change. So there is a lambda d. I'm sorry, there is a, there was, I'm sorry, I forgot something. I got a dV of phi, because I'm changing x, so there is a factor dV, which is important. Yeah. So I get dVs of phi. So this is a function of phi minus d minus 2 over 2 phi e prime of phi plus this constant, which is now pure number, log of 1 plus the second derivative of Vs of phi. And these are derivatives. V prime is means just phi is just dV over d phi. V double prime of phi is e double prime over d phi squared, etc. Okay, so you get this nice equation, which is a renormalization group flow equation in the space of potential. Normalization group flow equation in the space of potentials.
So,
yes.
What has happened in the Lambda squares in the diagram below?
This has disappeared because V. This is the second derivative of.
Is that expressing in dimensionless quantum?
What?
So the lambda is one.
The lambda. You mean you are. You are worrying about the lambda squared here?
Yeah, I don't want to be
controlled. Making those rescaling is equivalent to choose that lambda equal one in my calculation. So of course, you have one plus V double prime divided by one. So that's it. So that's why this is equivalent to stating this is equivalent to set lambda equal one. So you end up with this very nice renormalization group equation in the space of all V's. Well, at least all V's where everything is consistent. So you see, for instance, that if the second derivative is too negative, then the log doesn't make sense. But okay. Okay. So, it's almost it's almost finished. So I think there is no point in starting to discuss that. But what I'm going to show tomorrow is how you can take this approximate equation as a very nice example to study the feature of study the features closed and continuum limit. So I think you are going to see again things that we have already seen, but in a unified picture that I like. So I like to present the normalization from using for this example. Okay, and then I can just stop by saying that this is an equation. And remember, we had a potential which is now of the form V of phi equals sum over k of gk phi k for general k. You can divide this by factorial k. That's the most simple thing. And then, of course, v prime of phi is a polynomial sum over k minus 1. Pk divided by factorial k minus 1 by k minus 1. And v double prime of phi is sum over k of gk divided by factorial k minus 2 by k minus 2. So this is these are infinite series in k. But so you can study that in general form, or in general form, it is going to be linear. And then you are going to see, you see, you have a big space of G2, G4, G6, if you are interesting in the phi squared plus phi 4 plus phi 6. But it's, and you have a flow equation, flows in this infinite dimensional space of coupling. A flow in the space of couplings. And those are the flows of automatization, where you have, you see, the approximation that we have made is that we said that the only coupling which are relevant in our calculation are the pure powers of the field. Of course, a full renormalization group analysis shows we have also renormalization of the term which involves derivatives. So you are going to have a non-trivial renormalization of d phi, and you may have d phi squared times phi squared, d phi to the power 4, etc. So the big approximation is that we neglect the term of the form d phi, and phi phi, which are important. So in the full effective action, people have tricks and are able to go a bit beyond and study. But we have neglected those ones. Okay. And what I'm going to show tomorrow, on Thursday, is that, for instance, by truncating, if you just have this equation and just keep the first term, you assume only that G2 and G4 are non-zero, and in addition, you truncate the equation by keeping out the term of phi, because when you here you have a 1 plus phi squared. You take two derivatives of phi 4 operator, you get the phi squared. When you expand the log, you get term over the 1, term over the phi squared, term over the phi 4, and then term over phi phi. So if you truncate at order phi 4, you are going to get the renormalization group equation and the renormalization of the standard phi 4 theory. If you truncate at order phi 6, you are going to have more complicated flow, including the phi 6 coupling, what's called the tricritical coupling. And you see how which feature stays and which feature are modified, and why there is some universality, etc. So I'm going to see that on Thursday. So, truncation and flow structure next lecture. Okay. Yes?
One plus h is 1 over x.
Yeah, I set h equal 1, but well, you can reintroduce h bar. You mean h bar or h? I'm sorry.
But my problem is after this, you have some term like phi over some negative power, right? 1 over phi or something like that.
Not here. Not here.
No, because the
variable
1 plus something.
No, if you expand there, you see. Well, this is standard. Those are classical. The interaction is there.
Yeah.
And the approximation one does in this calculation is truncate, expand in phi. Expand in phi, but keep only terms of order phi A with K less or equal to some K max. Then you can study some flows, and then you can see whether as you increase K max, the feature of the flow stays the same, or if you know. And that, well, I can give you example where this occurs. Let K max go to infinity, but check whether the results you get are basically similar.
Another question: when you change the phi prime, what happens to measure passing
technology?
Because you're going to
have the measure is taken in the logs. You see, this is a one loop calculation, so this takes into account the measure in the phi.
But after this is that we change phi to phi prime, right?
In fact, that's taken into account by this dividing by Hollande. This is precisely taken into account by that. Remember that you see that this potential is in the exponential. So exponential of V, exponential of a log of lambda, that's some power of lambda. So in fact, this comes from the dimension of the measure and the fact that we want something dimensionless. So in the same way that we want the action to be dimensionless, we want the measure on the phi, which is formally product of x of d phi of point x. You see, if phi has dimension d minus 2 over 2, this has some dimension. So in fact, you have to, in order to have something which is dimensionless, you have to divide this by lambda d minus 2 over 2. And this measure is dimensionless. Okay, so this is x of d, this new phi of x, but this is the dimensionless phi. Everything is phi. And if you walk out a bit, and you see that it's okay. Well, let me stop there because it's going to be I will not do most of the calculation, but I will have to present a bit of detailed calculation, first order, and so this requires some time. So, but what you have to keep in mind is this basic equation, which is one example of a renormalization group flow equation. But using some other approximation, you get some other equation which is slightly different. For instance, in some lecture notes by Wilson and Kogut, and you have a different equation you don't have the log, but you have a different functional, non-linear functional of the derivative of the field, because it's a different approximation than the one that I've been doing there. But that also, qualitatively, they have the same result.